this congregation must receive over 400 new adult communicants a year in order to stay even. This whole mobility from rural America to the central city, from the central city to midtown, from midtown to suburbia, this is something that we are all caught up in, and that we must, wherever we're situated, become informed and aware and concerned about the job that the church is doing in all kinds of situations, and specifically in this most difficult place called the inner city. I think it means that our people in our congregations must begin to see that the central city is but a part of the total American community. For example, the Episcopal bishop in Chicago, Bishop Burrell, when he first became bishop, had the point of view that Chicago was the city in his diocese. But the more he got to see where the people came from, where the people were going, got to see the relationship between Chicago and the rest of his diocese and the rest of the nation, he began to be quite convinced that Chicago was a part of the nation, and that Chicago was not just the concern of Chicago congregations, nor just the concern of congregations in his diocese, but ought to be the concern of the total church in the total nation. Because the young adults that are reared on the farm go into the small town and then into the big city and then into certain neighborhoods of these big cities and then are lost in the shuffle. And so if we are really concerned that the gospel of Jesus Christ be brought to bear on the lives of all people and that it have a transforming impact on these lives from the cradle to the grave, then we must face up to the fact of the direction of mobility of the people, of how difficult it is for the gospel to be brought into the lives of people in certain of these neighborhoods. Enough for the situation in this particular dimension. Let's look now at what happens to churches in changing neighborhoods. As your city grows, your population moves outward. Your membership moves outward. A new kind of population group comes into the neighborhood. Pretty soon you begin to get the older members, and I don't mean necessarily old in terms of age of the members, but those who have been members longer. They are from one group of population, one kind of cultural background, one kind of ethnic background perhaps, and they begin to see this new group moving into the community. And the big challenge is there before them. Shall the Church of Jesus Christ be a witness to all people or to our people? Shall it be an inclusive outreach or shall it be a selective outreach? And I regret to inform you that all too often, the decision, not consciously perhaps, but nevertheless quite realistically, is made to have it a selective outreach. And this is why churches time and again have just faded away from the central city, from the inner city. And to add to the complexity of this thing, we find that those who have been members longest and who have achieved a higher social status tend to have the lion's share of the leadership, which makes it that much more difficult for the congregation to assume its rightful role in that changing community. By this I mean that not only does the general viewpoint of the membership works against reaching this new population segment coming into the community, but we have tended to place our leadership into the hands of those who are still the more reactionary in their thinking as concerns the newcomer. And this sounds like an oversimplification of the inner city church situation, but nevertheless you find these ingredients constantly reappearing in church after church. Now added to this, I mean, there's just one complication after another. Added to this is the transplanting of the American business ethic into the church realm. Namely that rather than a church being found faithful in its proclamation of the gospel, it has become more important that it be found successful. This is a terrible damnation, but nevertheless, I think it's an accurate description of all too many churches. So that being able to pay the bills, to indicate a growth in numbers, to indicate a certain kind of program, a certain kind of building, this becomes the prime goal, and being found faithful tends to take second place. Of course, this means then that as the neighborhood changes and people of lower economic status move in, people of a different background, it's going to be more difficult for the church to have this kind of production record, to show the dividend, quotes in ecclesiastical garb that the American Business Corporation must show if it's to be rated successful. And so the congregation begins to think in terms of relocating, or begins to think in terms of closing, or begins to think that really it doesn't have a job there in the first place. And we're wonderful, wonderful people when it comes to rationalizing in these kinds of situations. Now, at this point, I think once again, we have to go back to this matter of our being one in Christ, and of our being members of the household of faith, and of our being involved wherever we are in this particularly difficult situation. What I'm trying to say is that the American business ethic works in many ways when transplanted into the church, and one of the ways in which it is operative is that each congregation goes its own way because we are all separate corporations, and each corporation goes in its own particular direction and looks out for its own interests, and competition is good, and so on and so forth. The end result being that if you happen to be in a more fortunate circumstance and your sister congregation is in this particularly difficult circumstance, there is not the relationship of compassion and concern, bearing one another's burdens that we talk about so glibly, but nevertheless fail to put into practice in the inner city. Rather, it is that it's too bad that you're in that situation, but we've got our own affairs to take care of here. And I contend that the Roman Catholic Church, and I'm not pleading here for a hierarchical structure, but I contend that the Roman Catholic Church is better structured, better geared to deal with urban America than is Protestantism, especially that form of Protestantism which is extremely congregationally oriented. And that somehow, without reverting to this hierarchical pattern of Rome, we must find a method for breaking down these walls of congregational autonomy, these walls of isolation and separation, and each of us going our own way, so that we begin to see that wherever we are living and serving as soldiers of Jesus Christ, we are nevertheless involved in this inner city and have an involvement and a responsibility as part of our total ongoing life. There's a Presbyterian church in Oak Park in Chicago. Maybe some of you have heard of it, First Presbyterian. Very large and famous church. Today, it contributes annually $25,000 to the support of inner city work, center of Chicago. Also, it has over 50 of its key laymen who are directly involved in the work of inner city parishes. Now, this might be part of the response. Also, part of the response, I think, is that suburban churches begin to see that they must have a continuing program of education, not only within their own congregations, but within the total metropolitan area and even out into the rural areas, to help people to begin what the kinds of challenges and opportunities and responsibilities of the Christian church are in these different neighborhoods. And that the changes that are occurring in inner city neighborhoods will someday be occurring in outlying neighborhoods. You see, again, here we get this matter of a kind of historical perspective. And now I'm not talking in terms of hundreds of years, I'm talking in terms of decades. That, for instance, in Detroit, one of the churches that was started 30 years ago in open country territory, a brand new Lutheran home mission enterprise, 30 years ago today is in one of the slum neighborhoods of Detroit. Now, this will not happen as quickly in all cities or in all neighborhoods, but what is the lifespan of a congregation? What is the lifespan of a typical program? What is the lifespan of one leadership group in a congregation? And of course, overarching this whole thing is what is the responsibility of the total church in the midst of these changes. I mean, there's so many, many things that I'd like to tell you about and that I think need to be brought out into the open about this inner city. For example, the matter of rural versus urban. Will we honestly face up to the differences between rural life and urban life? And will we ask ourselves, what does the Lord require of us by way of redefining the role of the pastor and the role of the church in urban society? Just to hit on some of the high spots. Rural life basically is a very personal kind of life where every individual knows every other individual and knows all about his business and so on, and whether this be for good or bad. And likewise, if an individual gets out of line in the rural community, there are social pressures, there are ways whereby displeasure is recorded and influence is brought to bear on him to try to keep his behavior in conformity with the generally accepted behavior pattern of the group. Now, this is an oversimplification, but at least people know one another and know quite a bit about them. Transplant this kind of individual now from the rural community into the urban community and see what the differences are there. The individual does not know who all of these other individuals around him are. He does not know who these groups and these pressures and these agencies are that are changing the neighborhood within his own block, let's say. These real estate people who are exploiting the situation and violating the zoning code, these planners who are trying to work for community improvement. And so the individual finds himself lost in a maze of collectivity. Now, I contend, and I become more and more convinced of it as I work in these different urban areas, that the Church of Jesus Christ, if it is to be found responsible and effective in the urban community, must assume a responsibility for these structures, these groupings, these agencies, the power structure, if you will. And that for the church to insist that it has a responsibility only to the individual and not to pay one bit of attention to these groups, these structures, these agencies, these influences, these anonymous things that are at work and are shaping the community of the future, then I contend that church is exploiting urban America rather than serving it, and that church is not realistically facing up to the total challenge that stands before it. I'm not pleading for a revival of the social gospel, but I am pleading for some kind of a theologically sound approach of the Church of Jesus Christ to the urban America that is developing before our very eyes. Now, let me give you just one example. In Chicago right now, this gets way behind the scenes. This is not the kind of stuff that you find by reading the newspapers or by speaking to the casual observer. But in Chicago right now, the Roman Catholic Church is in a sort of contractual arrangement with a very dubious organization, supposedly promoting integration in a southwest section of Chicago of some 100,000 people, but actually promoting segregation. And in the process of this operation, the real estate people are being brought in as participants, the Protestant churches are being brought in as participants, the Catholics are in, all kinds of fraternal and civic groups are in, and the newspapers are a part to the conspiracy. Now, this sounds like some sort of a vast blanket accusation of Chicago urban life in general. Well, what I'm saying is that things are not as they seem to be, and that there are vast, mysterious, complex, and subtle forces at work. And the church believes that all it has to do is to speak to the individual, and somehow, magically, mysteriously, wondrously, this individual is going to be able to cope with the complexities of the urban community. That church has a very truncated picture of urban life and quite unrealistic. And so we find in Chicago right now that actually some Protestant leaders, many Protestant leaders, are helping to promote a Catholic plot for colonization and for segregation behind the guise of integration, and that the newspapers are part of this deception in that they are helping to create the image of integration. Now, I know I've left out many pieces of this puzzle and perhaps have confused you more by my report than enlightened you on it, but I refer you to the Christian Century. February 3rd issue described something similar to this in Chelsea in New York City. Back in October, there was an article and a couple of editorials about it, and this has been written up several of times since the October issue. But this is part of what has happened. Now, I want to give you plenty of time for questions, because I want to speak directly to your concerns and not just to talk endlessly about things that I feel ought to be said. But before I do, let me just tell a little bit about the other side, namely the response that is developing. I've tried to paint the dark, the negative side, because I don't think we can honestly face up to this urban challenge until we're ready to look at the facts and to see the destruction that has been occurring. Now, by way of response, the Lutherans have begun to arrest this trend of running away. And I think you'll find very few Lutheran congregations that are now doing this. I don't mean that congregations should never relocate, or should never merge, or should never close. Much to the contrary, in Logan Square in Chicago, some of you know that area, 18 Lutheran churches in a mile and a half radius. That was too many, even when the place was solidly Swedish and German. But you never needed that many then, you don't need that many now, when the area is heavily Catholic and Southern white. I mean, we have a responsibility to those people, definitely, but not 18 churches worth. But again, try to get a bunch of stubborn Norwegians to merge, and you really are dealing with something. Or Germans, too. So there is a time when the church must think about closing. In other words, there is a time when a soldier loses his life in the line of duty, so there comes a time when the church no longer is needed or must give up its life in order to complete its mission. Congregations are responding to these changing neighborhoods now. We have hundreds of Lutheran congregations that are integrated, for example, and a great deal could be said about this. Hundreds of congregations that are dealing with quite different class and cultural groups than they've ever dealt with before. Also, we find that suburban congregations are becoming more interested and concerned about the challenge of the inner city and are beginning to be related to this. We find a greater interest in evaluation of the needs in these changing communities. In other words, not that we do business as usual and continue the status quo indefinitely, but that we are ready to look at the situation and to learn as much as we can about it in order that we can adapt our program and our ministry to meet the needs that are there instead of just continuing as we have in the past. Congregations are beginning to work with other agencies and institutions in the community. This is very important. And again, this is part of the breakaway from the traditional rural approach. In rural America, you have individualism that is fostered. in urban America, individualism has to be reconsidered, and the church or the pastor or the layman who feel that somehow the church can do its job in the changing inner city neighborhood, completely disregarding the welfare council, completely disregarding the urban renewal commission, completely ignoring the mayor's commission on human relations, and all of these other agencies that are trying to work for the not necessarily improvement of the community, but somehow holding the community together, that church is cutting off a tremendous resource in the way of allies and information and support and teamwork in the community. So we find congregations willing to relate themselves to these agencies. Also, we find congregations working together. Now, I'm not pleading for some sort of creeping meatballism or something, you know, socialism in the church, but I'm saying that in the inner city, the job is so difficult that it is important that our congregations relate themselves to one another in some kind of a semi-structured way. Larger parishes are being developed. Staff is being hired by groups of churches. Specialized programs are being developed by one church on behalf of three or four churches. New kinds of ministries are being attempted. For example, in First Church Pittsburgh, a trained counselor has been hired and placed on the staff on behalf of all of the Lutheran churches in the Pittsburgh area. Or in some other centers, adult education on behalf of a whole group of churches is being developed in one of the churches. Social workers are being added to the staff of inner city churches. Or parish workers who've had some training in social work or some orientation in this direction. Because I am convinced that we cannot respond as effectively as possible in the inner city without having some message, without having some service in this realm of the social problems which everywhere abound. And I could go on and on listing what is happening. I think the important thing is that congregations and districts, as well as national mission boards, are seeing that there is a tremendous challenge in the inner city, and that perhaps in our drive to get into the suburban areas, and we must continue to start just as many missions as before, if not more, to keep up with the population growth and the population shift. But along with this, we've got to responsibly move back into the inner city. Three new congregations have been started in the center of Chicago in the last 5 years, one in the Loop, one 2 miles west, one 2 miles south. And others are going to be coming in. A new mission was started in Brooklyn, first Protestant church to go into Brooklyn in over a generation, over 30 years. Many things like this are happening. The United Lutheran Church, for example, will soon be spending better than $1 million a year in inner city work. They have a national staff for this work now. The TALC group, that's the ALC-ELC merger, they have now moved into this thing with a national staff and budget. Missouri Synod, as you know, is structured somewhat differently, and it's more in the hands of districts. But there are indications that the Missouri Synod will be moving into this on a national level very soon. So that there is a response developing, and more we're coming to see that the inner city is not only the responsibility of congregations which are there now, but is the responsibility of the total church, including our pastors and laymen, wherever they might be. Well, we have a little bit of time left, Dr. Schuler. We just have questions from the floor now.
Thank you. Yes, I do.
That's a tough question, but I think it's an important one. I think, for example, Augustana needs some special attention here, because it seems to me that either because of their cultural background or because of the strong influence at the seminary of a man like A.D. Madison or so on, there seems to be a greater sort of built-in concern in Augustana for the social problem, for the social issue, which makes them more ready to move into some of these affairs of community concern. I'm thinking, for example, of the job that Phil Johnson did at Salem in Chicago, where his church really broke the barrier on integration and did a tremendous job by way of helping a community to much more peacefully than had ever been achieved before to make the transition from white to integrated and gradually becoming more Negro. So I do think that Augustana needs special study in this respect. I think that the United Lutheran Church, by virtue of being so much more in urban areas, you see, they have something like, I've forgotten the count now. I think it's something like 1,500 or 2,000 of their churches that are in urban areas. They are the most urbanized of all Lutheran groups, so that they've been living with problems of this kind longer than any of us. And so there you find a greater readiness to deal with these. I think the ELC is the least responsive in urban America. They are by far the most rural. Their emphasis has been much more pietistic. I mean, I'm not talking out of school or anything. I've discussed this with them too. And individualistic, so that matters of social dimension and community concern almost seem totally foreign to them. And likewise, they have been so loosely structured that to get congregations to, lock arms and to see themselves as being involved in a kind of collective enterprise is almost anathema to the North Dakota farmer, which mentality dominates the ELC. I mean, I've heard it all around in Missouri Synod. I'll come in here. I'm zeroing in on Missouri now. Frankly, I'm encouraged by what I see happening in the Missouri Synod in the urban church. Of course, you do have this strong district autonomy and home mission. And I think, in a way, this tends to be a weakness when it comes to the urban church because, going back to my Episcopal friend Burl, he just has Chicago and he doesn't see all these other cities. I mean, and there is something to this business of being able to deal with a lot of similar situations. So I think there's something to getting a national program in urban church for Missouri Synod. And then I do feel that the strong theological emphasis in Missouri has been a bulwark in this, because this has enabled the Missouri Synod congregations to stay put, I think, longer than some of the other Lutheran groups. In Chicago, for example, I do think that Missouri has the best record of holding the line. Now, some of this holding the line is achieved by the Germans just keeping the Negroes out. It's a very complicated thing, but I think there are differences, and we need to, at the same time that we honestly look at what's happening in our community, we need to look back at our heritage and our tradition to see what strengths and weaknesses there are there. And I think part of the answer lies in a social dimension to our gospel understanding. I think part of it lies in our sophistication in urban affairs. I think part of it lies in our attitude towards individualism versus some kind of corporate action, a whole host of things. That's part of the answer. Not by material, I mean printed matter and so on. Of course, again, that varies from body to body. In other words, I think that in the United Lutheran Church, there has been quite a bit of material on this. I think here again, you go back to this matter of awareness of this as a problem. And I think that, let's say Missouri Synod, I think that here is where the district autonomy on home mission poses a problem. You see, your strength is in these 12 breadbasket states out here, and you're heavily rural, and your people that are in these areas don't realize that, for example, New York City metropolitan area is going to double in area in the next 20 years. I mean, that it, in 20 years it'll grow as much as it did in 300 years. They don't realize all of these metropolitan shifts, and they tend to dominate much of the work that comes out of your headquarters in St. Louis. I mean, this is my own impression. I think that somehow your national group must highlight this as a concern of the total church, thinking not so much about where we have been and where we are now strong, but where the future of our nation is going to be and what the job is ahead of it. So I think part of it is just a kind of a limited awareness that you find. I mean, I'm not speaking of Hilmer now. Dr. Hilmer is vitally aware of this whole business. But again, I don't think that his board has the resources to move into this thing that some of the other boards do. I think ULC and Augustana have done quite a bit by way of pushing this as a national concern. The best publication on this is the City Church, put out by the National Council of Churches. It comes out, five or six times a year. And let me just say this, that I do feel that this whole business of the explosion of metropolis, the changing neighborhoods and so on, is making it imperative that somehow we develop a working relationship with other evangelical Christians in these metropolitan areas. I'm not advocating a watering down of our theological position one bit, nor am I advocating any kind of a unionism. I know that's a bad word. But I am saying that this thing is so tremendous and the challenge is so great, the needs are so varied, that we've just got to relate ourselves with some kind of structure to these agencies. One example, as I mentioned at a workshop yesterday, in Pittsburgh, the men who are planning this renewal program there, they're absolutely fed up with trying to deal with 100 and some different varieties of Protestantism, as a result, the Protestant church is not having its impact in the planning of the Pittsburgh of tomorrow, and that's just one city. This stuff is going on in all cities, and so I say we've got to find some vehicle for communication. Good question. I feel that especially in urban America, we need to get our people in our churches certainly to continue and intensify Bible study. And by the way, this study that Dr. Schuller mentioned indicated that Lutherans were not quite as strong in their knowledge of the Bible as we thought they were. But I think also getting them to become aware of what is happening in the community. In other words, that they become informed and see that the Church of Jesus Christ is concerned about community affairs. Now, you asked specifically about real estate. As far as the local congregation, I think that it needs to relate itself to a community organization or to some kind of council in its neighborhood. And more you find these councils developing, trying to stop some of the vicious chopping up of apartments, you know, into little one-room flats and so on. Trying to enforce zoning codes. Trying to see that adequate police protection is provided and that adequate schools are there and so on. I'm not saying that the church, you know, shall become all things to all men and that the church shall somehow rule the community, but that, believe me, responsible government and planning and renewal leaders are saying this in so many words, that in some of these highly mobile, disorganized communities, the church is the only institution that can provide continuity and leadership for the preservation of the community. I mean, this is what they're saying, not just to me, but to other people. And then if in that kind of situation, the church says, we don't give a hang, this is none of our business, the church ought to face up to what it is saying. It ought to face up to the fact that it's saying it doesn't love these people, it doesn't care about these people, and all it wants is to get a bunch of card-carrying members on the rolls of the church, period. I mean, it's as plain and simple as that. So I do feel that churches, especially in urban areas, ought to begin to study and be aware of the practices and the forces that are shaping the community. Not that we're going to be able to build a model community or preserve some sort of an ideal situation, but at least we can help to create a system of checks and balances. Otherwise, the exploiters will run rampant.
First, I wonder if you'd like and just read an invitation to some of you. Our urban church director is having a lunch at the office to the East Central Dining Hall. There's a good thing you want to say about half hour 45 minutes of service here. We don't have to be talking about 1:15 half of the service. We hope to be able to run the little bit of the rest at this time and speak to folks who are coming back on the next time. Could you extend that to those of you who are particularly interested in invitation to the Garden Center of our project team, asking to be given a support of our 25-1 and so on. At this time, we're going to have a chance to do it.
Thank you.